moving. Jangamani and moving. Tata, similarly. Arao, unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Eva, certainly. Guna Pravaha, emanation of material nature. Translation. During the rainy season, water is generated from the sun. And in due course of time, during the summer season, the very same water is again absorbed by the sun. Similarly, all living entities, moving and inert, are generated from the earth. And again, after some time, they all return to the earth as dust. Similarly, everything emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in due course of time, everything enters into Him again. You can say after me, during the rainy season, water is generated from the sun. And in due course of time, during the summer season, the very same water is again absorbed by the sun. Similarly, all living entities, moving and inert, are generated from the earth. And again, after some time, they all return to the earth as dust. Similarly, everything emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And in due course of time, everything enters into Him again. Srila Prabhupada's purport. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, impersonalist philosophers cannot understand how everything comes out from the Supreme Person and then merges into Him again. As Brahma Samhita 5:40 confirms, Yasya Prabha Prabhavato Jagaranda Koti Kotishvashesha Vasudadi Vibhuti Binnam Tad Brahma Nishkalam Anantam Vashesha Bhutam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. Transcendental rays emanate from the body of Krishna. And within those rays, which are the Brahman effulgence, everything is existing. This is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita 9:4. Matstani sarva bhutani. Although Krishna is not personally present everywhere, His energy is the cause of all creation. The entire cosmic manifestation is nothing but a display of Krishna's energy. The two examples given in this verse are very vivid. During the rainy season, the rain, by rejuvenating the production of vegetables on earth, enables man and animals to obtain living energy. When there is no rain, food is scarce, and man and animals simply die. All vegetables, as well as moving living entities, are originally products of the earth. They come from the earth, and again they merge into the earth. Similarly, the total material energy is generated from the body of Krishna, and at such a time, the entire cosmic manifestation is visible. When Krishna winds up His energy, everything vanishes. This is explained in a different way in Brahma Samhita 5:48. Yasyaika nisvasitakam kalam atavalambya Jivanti Loma Vilaja Jagarandanata Vishnur Mahansa Iha Yasya Kala Vishesho Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. This entire material creation comes from the body of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and at the time of annihilation again enters into Him. This process of creation and dissolution is made possible by the breathing of the Mahavishnu, who is only a plenary portion of Krishna. So again, the text. During the rainy season, water is generated from the sun. And in due course of time, during the summer season, the very same water is again absorbed by the sun. Similarly, all living entities, moving and inert, are generated from the earth, and again after some time, they all return to the earth as dust. Similarly, everything emanates from the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and in due course of time, everything enters into Him again. So, in this verse, these verses, this one, the ones coming, the ones in the back, the particular position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is being delineated by the Prachetas, by Narada Muni. Who is it with whom we are dealing when we are dealing with Krishna? So the answer is that He is the Absolute Truth, the ultimate source of all energies. This is defined like this in the beginning of Vedanta Sutra. It says, Atato Brahma Jignasa. Now, therefore, your business is Brahma Jignasa, inquiry into Brahman. And then that Brahman is defined, Janmadi Asya Yataha. Janmadi Asya Yataha. That from which Yataha comes, Janma Asya, etc. comes origination, maintenance, and dissolution. That's understood by that. These are sutras. They're very, compact, terse, laconic, for mnemonic purposes. So you can remember them. A few words as possible. So you have to unpack it a bit. That from which everything has its origin, by whom everything is maintained, and to which everything returns. That's what is meant by, indicated by, denoted by Brahman. So here they say this is Hari. Prabhupada starts his purport with a typically provocative sentence. Because of their poor fund of knowledge, impersonalist philosophers cannot understand how everything comes out from the Supreme Person and then merges into Him again. It's a fact. The actual doctrine is actually in contradiction to the statement of the Brahma Sutra, Vedanta Sutra. The actual doctrine propagated by impersonalists is the doctrine Vada. Vada in Sanskrit means doctrine. Vivartavada. The doctrine of illusion. The emanation of everything from the Supreme is ultimately denied. There is no emanation from Brahman because it's not there. It's vivarta. It's illusory. Brahma satya jagan mitya. Brahman is real. Everything else does not exist. So it's argued that if the all these, everything were to emanate from the Supreme, then there would be change in the Supreme. And since the Supreme cannot change, therefore this emanation does not actually take place. Argument is presented like that. There are other arguments. I'll go through some of them. This consideration. Why this denial, ultimate denial? What is the truth? Parinamavada. The teaching that the energies are transformed. So here, the absolute truth is unchanged, but his energies go out and they undergo transformation, but that does not affect him. Because it's thought that if you can say, you have a mundane idea, that if so much emanates from the Supreme, then the Supreme, the absolute truth, is thereby diminished. If I have a pie, this is common sense, I take out one slice, I now have 7/8 pie, not whole pie. 2 slices, 3 slices, until finally the pie is dispersed. We know this. You take your cake and you can't have it and eat it too. But the absolute truth is the cake that gets eaten and you have it still. It took me years to realize what that meant, by the way. You can't. People always used to tell me you can't have your cake and eat it too. And what does that mean? You have to have it in order to eat it. But it means that after you eat it, it's gone. I didn't figure that out until I was, you know, late in my teens. So it's like that. It's stated that if there was an emanation were true, then the absolute would be diminished or altered. But that's already dealt with also in the invocation to Isho Upanishad and other Upanishad. Same shloka is there. Om Purnam Madah Purnam Idam Purnam Purnam Udachyate. This says that the absolute truth is Purna. Purna means full, complete, perfect. Om Purnam, Adat Purnam, and that this material world is also Purnam. It's complete. Purnat Purnam Udashate, Purnashi Purnam Adaya, Purnam Eva Vasishate. That the absolute truth is so Purnam, that even though you take Purnam away, it remains Purnam. So it's precisely like this. Krishna is the fountainhead of all existence. Therefore, he doesn't diminish. The supplies are coming, everything is coming out, the energy is coming out. If you got him in a laboratory and you hooked up your little things, you say, my God, Watson, this is impossible. Because all this voltage is coming out and yet there's no diminution. Like a battered battery that never runs down. But people are looking for this. Things like perpetual motion machines, something that produces more energy than it delivers. It's like the Philosopher's Stone. These are transcendental positions. But that's Krishna. That's his nature. So he can produce so much can come out, and these energies can all undergo transformations and changes in the course of producing the material world. And what they do is described very, very clearly and in intricate detail in Srimad Bhagavatam, how it comes out as pradhan, undifferentiated, primordial, proto-matter. And then things happen, and gradually differentiation takes place, and the creation as we know it arises, all from the transformation of this energy. He's never transformed himself. And then winds it up again. Here we have a couple of metaphors that were given. How water comes out of the sun and goes back up again. In the rainy season, it's the sunshine that produces the rain. And then it's the sunshine that lifts it up. Evaporates all the water and goes back into the atmosphere. So in this way, or how everything comes, all moving and non-moving things take their body from the earth, manifest a while and go back to the earth again. So with the earth itself and the sun itself, they have their origin in Krishna, the original cause of all causes. This is not, people find this difficult to accept, because it goes beyond these mundane conceptions that sometimes we have in our minds. Even intelligent people deny it. Thomas Aquinas also, Summa Contra Gentiles, same argument against this doctrine of emanation, which was also propounded, was known to from Plotinus and others against it. That means that God would be changed. But there are other problems that people have with this notion of Krishna's personal existence and his energies, which have to be dealt with. The absolute truth means unlimited. Absolute means not relative. What does it mean? Not relative or absolute? It means there's no other thing to relate to. And unlimited means also there can't be, I have to fill every nook and cranny of existence if I'm unlimited. As soon as there is an environment, say I'm an individual, a person, like we say, the absolute truth is the ultimate aspect, personal, there's already limitation. There's a this as opposed to a that. Therefore, a limited being. He has an environment. As a world. So then therefore denied. There can't be anything over against the absolute truth. So it's ultimately all absolutely, thoroughly one. And what to do with this awkward manifestation we have around here, which seems to contradict what we understand to be true about the absolute truth? We consign it to irreality. It doesn't exist. It has no... In the name of non-duality, they get rid of this material world. You have to understand that in the Mayavadi doctrine, there is no relationship between Brahman and the world. It's actually, to my mind, it's the ultimate dualism. You can't get there from here. There's no connection whatsoever. There's no causal relationship. There is no relationship. In Mayavada philosophy, from the point of view of Brahman, the material world Maya doesn't exist. And from the point of view of Maya, Brahman doesn't exist. You can't get there from here. And in fact, the whole philosophy has to self-destruct anyway. In order to achieve the goal. So it's duality. There's this ultimate dualism that's there, because there is no relationship whatsoever. There's just this somehow or other, there's this illusion whose existence cannot be explained or accounted for. It's inexplicable, and it doesn't really exist, although we talk about it, sort of. It doesn't have any existence. So how do we deal with this objection that if there is a world coming from Krishna, then Krishna is limited? If he's a person, he's limited. Well, first of all, we have to say, well, if he's not a person, he's limited too, right? Not being a person is a condition of being limitation. Is it not? So you don't, it's not so easy to get out of it by saying, well, not this, not this. Say, yes, we have to preserve the unlimitedness of the Supreme, so we can't say if he's blue and not green, therefore no color whatsoever. If he has any form, he'd be this, and so no form whatsoever. And that way, by the successive eliminations of all predicates, you arrive at a cognitive zero and you say, there it is. The unlimited, but you've actually got something that's limited, because you've taken everything away. There's nothing left. So this procedure itself has a few defects in it for actually describing what is unlimited. The first point. Second point is that so we have to say, yes, let's say that Krishna has form. And then they say, well, then limited, because form means boundary. This and not of that. Here Krishna stops, here something else begins. But there is, in the absolute truth, transcendental relativity. There's eternal, internal variegatedness. But the answer is, it's a fact that there is nothing but Krishna. This doctrine is true. There is Krishna and Krishna's energies, and together, Krishna and Krishna's energies make up the absolute truth. We don't separate Krishna from his energies. This world is not another thing that limits Krishna. It is Krishna himself expanded in this form. It doesn't limit him, rather it's the expression of his unlimited power and opulence. So, nothing is different from Krishna. At the same time, Krishna is not nothing is different from Krishna, but at the same time, Krishna remains different from everything. If you take the sum total of everything that emanates from Krishna, it doesn't add up to Krishna. There's more. There's more. There's more. There's that whole pie from which all those slices are coming out of. That pie which actually is producing so many other littler pies, and so on. That's Krishna. So he's not depleted by this. He remains in his personal existence. So this bound, this border between that Krishna has form, Krishna has name, but it's really, this is just the internal variegated pastimes of the absolute truth. He's manifesting himself in this way. And engaging in his blissful occupations of entertaining himself and always increasing his bliss. And there's a little portion of this pastime that's covered by illusion, because the nature of the case, there's some jivas who don't want to participate And so we participate in an illusory way in which we are cut off from the actual bliss of the absolute truth. We have our own perverted little existence we're trying to make something out of. That's going on. But actually, those pastimes, this is the absolute truth, self-manifestation. Not here, not in history, as like some, like Hegel. He thought that in history, the suffering and struggle of history, the absolute truth was coming to full self-consciousness, expressed in the form ultimately of Hegel. That's not where it's happening. It's happening in the material philosophers. They think that the material energy is the only form of Krishna's energy. They don't know of the internal potency. Now, how could they know the internal potency? That has to be delivered. We have to accept messages from Krishna himself and others who are residents of that internal potency and who know how to create outposts of this internal potency within the kingdom of Maya itself, and who can bring us into those affairs of the pastimes of the absolute truth, the loving exchanges between Krishna, the residents of Goloka Vrindavan. So in this way, actually, we come to know this absolute truth, not by the speculative method. It has its defects. It only gets so far. And it's illuminative. Just like the fullness and the richness of the absolute truth. There's some intuition that is there, but you have no access to it. Because always the speculative method proceeds from diversity to unity and tries to go back from unity to diversity again, but never figures out how to do it. You take somebody like Plato, for example. Simple example. I'll simplify it somewhat. You see all around there's different categories of things. There's forces. So everything that you call a horse, they've got some class characteristics. In fact, they have an essence, which is something to do with horseness. And horses come and go, but horseness remains. And so you have these different particular temporary embodiments of horseness. But what seems to be eternal and unchanging is the horseness itself. So that Adon is a form, what Plato called an idea or a form, not to be confused with the way we use the word form. It means the abstract essence of horseness. You can't see it. I don't know how you would perceive it exactly. There's some way to perceive them. So similarly, there's human beings, men, women, whatever. All these different things are the forms, and there's a whole world up there of forms, of the essences of things. But still you've got plurality. You see, you've eliminated all these individuals. In other words, you don't have a lot of horses. There's no black beauty. There's no Trigger, yeah, other famous horses. Silver. Flicker, right. There's no Lassie, there's just dogness, you know. Just the generic mutt himself, itself, up there. So, but you still got a lot of diversity. Right? So then you go further, because you want to, there's something like, what do all these forms have in common? What's the form of forms, or the essence of essence? And then you get that idea of the absolute truth, variously known as the good, the true, or the beautiful. which corresponds rather neatly to Satchit Ananda. But notice how abstract you've gotten now. First of all, you just get from, you know, this dog that you can feel and touch to just like the abstract essence of dogness, whatever that is. And then, you know, between dogs and horses and cats, you know, you get make it higher. Later on, you know, there's hierarchies, and finally you get to the essence of essences, the form of forms, which you can understand is totally empty of content, intelligible content. So you've gotten all this unity, you've gotten this unity, trying to speculate your way to the source from which everything comes, but it's just ungraspable, unsayable, unnameable, unmentionable. And they speak like that, like this mystic Dionysius, the Areopagite, he says, describing God. He's a Christian, Neoplatonist, he says. Beyond good, beyond truth, beyond beauty, beyond justice, and then he says, beyond, beyond. But somewhere in this, in this chapter, that's actually here, the last chapter, is describing the Krishna as Paramaparat, beyond, beyond. The same word is being used. Prabhupada says in the purport, this means beyond the, better than the best, beyond the Brahman effulgence. So you see what that does if you say beyond good, beyond true, beyond beautiful. And then you say beyond, beyond. So what does those words beyond mean? If you just use them in those sentences, it becomes just blow your mind. So that's Krishna. But by speculative, you can only go up this way, this far. But here we have a whole other method. But that has to be descending. If you want to enter into the variegated pastimes of the Absolute Truth and participate in the actual personal life of the Absolute Truth, that requires, Krishna's saying, he's offering it to everybody. He says, Manmana bhava mad bhakto majayi mam namaskaru. Always think of me. Bhava mad bhakto. Become my devotee. This way, come to me. He's saying you don't have to go through this kind of business of, you know, going all the way. He offers this direct approach. Through bhakti yoga, through Krishna consciousness. So because it's available to anybody, don't look down on it. Because sometimes this is done. Because bhakti yoga can be taken up. There's no prior qualifications. So I may be proud of my academic or scholarly qualifications, and I may like to think that somebody who hasn't spent so much time gaining blear-eyed wisdom by midnight oil has the same chance of the Absolute Truth that I do, so I may want to keep it a more exclusive club. So this kind of pride doesn't help us enter into the Absolute Truth. We have to be qualified. Become very, very highly qualified. But this brings on another group of qualities of personal dealings with other devotees, with spiritual master, with Krishna, to become humble. So this is the much more advanced position, actually, to enter into this personal, private pastimes of the Absolute Truth, as he's always increasing his bliss more and more through his playful activities. And that always goes on. Here, this material world, it comes out, it goes back in, it comes out, and it goes back in, it comes out. But the major portion, the three-quarter portion, always remains. It's not subjected like that. That is, Krishna eternally maintains for his own pleasure and the pleasure of his devotees, by which in that reciprocation, his joy and the joy of all, everyone, every creation is increased. So any questions? Yes, Dr. Lee. Yeah, you do, actually. If you understand that it comes from Krishna, you get it. When the Prabhupada explains this very carefully, that when the fragmentary units are connected through devotional service with the complete, they become complete in themselves. What you have is the illusion of separateness. But if that illusion of separateness is gone, then also you become part of the complete. You have a different, locus standi, our position as part of the Absolute Truth is not to be Krishna. Our position is Krishna's energy. Those are the two eternally different perspectives. That's what it is. We have a different perspective. There's Krishna's perspective, and there's our perspective. And our perspective never becomes his perspective. We both remain individuals. But from our perspective, and in our perspective, we become complete. No, you get Krishna. Who's got Krishna more than Radharani? Who gets it? Remember, the meek shall inherit the complete cosmic manifestation. Those people get it. That's right. That's because you're not dovetailed with the complete by devotional service. You get to be Noriega somebody. Incomplete. The United States customer in Panama, big enjoyer. Yeah. Well, it's a very interesting question, but I think, to my understanding, is that when you're enlightened, you discover you never were here, so you didn't actually come from here to there. What? He doesn't exist, right? Well, you just have to choose your tour guide and see who's going to take you there. I haven't seen any other books that describe the transcendental realm, by the way. I don't know of any other books. Do you? Is Krishna there? Well, I don't want to go there then.
Why should we put our faith in the Vedic understanding? Because that's the understanding. Why do I put my faith in the Vedic understanding? Well, a number of different reasons. But the first reason is that I put my faith in the Vedic understanding is that... A couple of reasons, actually. That by following the actual process, there's tangible spiritual advancement, A. And that, second of all, I can understand philosophically, by conviction, that this is, that if Krishna is left out, you don't have the highest truth. Anywhere that explains Krishna consciousness, it doesn't necessarily, I don't know what you mean by non-Vedic understanding, because it may go under some other sectarian name, doesn't necessarily mean it's non-Vedic, by the way. But it's a simple thing. It's like the descending method. You know, it's like you are sick, you want to go to a doctor. You don't know anything about medicine. But you need a good doctor. What do? You look at a person's credentials. And you see that this person has graduated from a good medical school, did his residency in such and such a place, passed his boards, has been practicing well, practicing physician in several well-reputed, well-established hospitals. And so then you say, okay, what else can you do? So Krishna says, evam parampara praptam imam rajashayo vidu. He says, if you want to understand this process, I've established this parampara, this disciplic succession, and you have to hook up to it. Now you may say that, but you only know that there's a disciplic succession if you have accepted Krishna's word for it. And if you accept Krishna's word for it on the basis of the disciplic succession, then you got yourself into a loop. So what? What else are you going to do? Where else are you going to find out? Say this is the case. Say Krishna is revealing himself. Say here is all knowledge. It comes from the absolute truth. It's descending knowledge. So it comes down one person after another. Say that's the situation. How else are you going to find out about it? What alternative is there, given that reality, except that the members who are representatives of the succession come and say, we're members and representatives of this disciplined succession. And we offer two things, jnana and vijnana, theoretical knowledge and practical realization. So you can try it or not try it. See how effective it is. But I don't see what else you can do. What is Krishna supposed to do? And the ultimate reason, of course, that we accept it is because we recognize Krishna. We're renegades from his party. So when they come back to bring us back, actually we know deep inside what's going on. It's not like we're being approached when we meet devotees by real strangers. We're saying, uh-oh. Party's over. Thank God. Suchi, did you have a question? This process of creation and dissolution is made possible by the breathing of Mahavishnu, was only a plenary portion of Krishna. Vishnur Mahansa Iha Yatsha Kala Vishesho is Kala of Krishna. So think of how it's, what it means is that Mahavishnu is an expansion of Krishna. Think of how great Krishna is. Kala means plenary expansion. Yeah, that's right. Because Krishna still has some characteristics and attributes that Mahavishnu doesn't have. Sure. More attractive anyway. Mahavishnu is pretty impressive. Universes come out of his skin pores. But Krishna plays on his flute. Attracts the gopis, herds the cows. I mean, to some people, it's more impressive to have universes come out of your skin pores than to play a flute. But they haven't heard Krishna playing the flute. Krishna's all attractive. Mahavishnu is not all attractive, or not as attractive as Krishna.